New ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Tosca Musk, an award-winning producer and director of over 30 feature films, television movies, and web content. Among other achievements, as well as being the mother of 2 4-year-old twins, Musk recently co-created Passionflix, an over-the-top streaming platform that produces movies and series based on romance novels. Tosca, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You have a really interesting background. In addition to producing and directing over 30 feature films, which is kind of amazing because that's a lot of films in a short period of time, you produced Tiki Bar TV, which was a pioneering web series. I believe Steve Jobs even highlighted it in one of his keynote speeches. You also worked at both Magnolia Pictures and Alliance Atlantis. So you've done a lot in your career, and a lot of change has happened during the period of time in which your career has been. So what would you say is the most significant change that you're seeing?
I think that right now people realizing that they should make content specifically for an audience, really, really target that audience. That's really been something that I've noticed people paying more attention to. I've managed to do that for almost my entire career, specifically with Tiki Bar, because we knew who our audience was and we were laser focused on that audience. Mm-hmm. And I feel like so many other industries and groups and companies now are finding their niche and finding their audience and targeting them. And I think that that's a great thing.
Right. That's sort of the long tail that everybody talks about as being possible in this new, you know, huge content arena. One thing I'm curious about, though, is discovery. With all of the, you know, nicheification, if you will, of content, does that make discovery more challenging for people to find your content?
I imagine it would. I mean, our niche is women, so it's a mega niche. Right. We're targeting 50% of the population, so ours shouldn't be that hard to find. But yes, it is very hard to discern which OTT platform to go to, and even to find out, you know, how to get them or how to stream them all. It is overwhelming, I think, for a lot of people.
Right.
So
right.
In our situation, we work very closely because all of our movies at Passionflix are based off of best-selling IP. We work with the authors to promote the content directly to the audience.
Right. So to back up, when did you launch Passionflix with your partners?
The company was founded a year and a half ago, but we launched Passionflix in September 1, 2017.
Oh, congratulations. Wow.
Thanks.
And you've just released Hollywood Dirt, is that, or you've just wrapped it?
We have released our third original movie already. So released Hollywood. It's been a busy year. I directed 3 features last year and produced 4 while launching that company. So, and 4-year-old twins.
And you really take care of kids while you're doing that. I bow down. I am not worthy. My 2 kids and I, this is, whoa, okay. So you have and all of these features were based on best-selling authors. Do you look at things like those authors' social followings? Is that part of what you activate when you promote your films?
Yes, we absolutely take that into account. One of the first things that we do when we look at a book, when we look at a book, is what the story is. Is the story compelling? Is it something that we want to tell? Is the female character strong and empowering? Mm-hmm. And if it meets those qualifications, then we will go ahead and look at the author itself and say, does this author have the kind of reach that we need for a new company?
Right.
Long term, it won't be that necessary. We could go for anything. But in the short term, we do have to pay attention to their social media following and what kind of support we would get from them if we made their book into a movie.
Right. One of the things in my business that we've been looking at is brand recognition and how people are discovering television content. And we've found that it has moved increasingly to social platforms. You know, like 58% is being discovered through social. And of course, the lion's share of that is Facebook. And with the change in the algorithm, that's made it increasingly challenging that you sort of have to pay. Everything's, you know, the organic reach is being throttled. But I'm curious if maybe you escape that, if you're really using and leveraging the author's following rather than, are you creating it around the author or are you pushing it through Passion Flicks? You know, what is the presence of Passion Flicks on these platforms?
Passion Flicks has a pretty good reach. I mean, for just starting in September, we have a reach of about 70,000 people.
That's great.
On our various social media platforms. We have a strong Instagram presence that's building every day. We have a pretty significant Facebook presence and a, you know, smaller Twitter presence, but it's there. So we do leverage our social media platforms, but we do work also with the authors and with the actors as well that come in to promote and push and try and, you know, get around some of those algorithms because, yes, Facebook will prevent us from sharing with a lot of people. But, you know, the interesting thing is we've even tried paying for it. So we've tried Facebook ads and things to push it and promote it. And it still doesn't get out to those people. So I'm not really sure how the Facebook ads work because, you know, it's new to me. But they don't get to the people that we need to get to.
So, well, that seems like a Facebook service issue because they tend to be able to do highly, highly targeted marketing. And so perhaps your rep needs a talking to, I think, is what's going on there.
Very, very likely.
But in addition, So I know how, you know, if I'm dealing with Hulu or Netflix or Amazon, I know where to find them. Is Passion Flicks on Apple TV? Can I find it that way? How do I find Passion Flicks if I'm a consumer?
So Passion Flicks, because we're so new, we're not on all the different platforms yet. We are on Samsung Smart TVs, Google Chromecast, but mostly you need to download the app from the App Store, Google Play or the Apple App Store, and then you can watch it on your smartphone, tablet, you can Chromecast it, Samsung TVs, as I mentioned, and we're slowly but surely getting onto more platforms. So we're looking at becoming an Amazon app, and then we'll go to Roku and, you know, and slowly but surely get onto Apple TV. It's all in the roadmap, but, you know, it takes a little while to develop that technology.
Well, I mean, come on, you launched in September. Come on, TikTok. You're doing quite well, I think.
I know, but I did make 4 features.
I suppose we'll give you a pass this time, but really, you're shirking.
You. I appreciate it.
So you're not only directing and producing, are you also the person marketing and selling and having these meetings with these platforms to say, here's why I should be added to your platform? Or is that your role as well?
Yes. I mean, I'm the CEO, so I oversee a lot of those conversations. That we do have some people that work that, you know, do marketing for us, and then I just oversee a lot of them, and my partners do as well. So, you know, we have a lot of outsourcing.
Right. So in terms of competing with these giant behemoths, I mean, do you, with your original and also sort of your revenue model, so do you license your original content to anybody else or do you keep it all that it can only be seen on your platform or broadcast TV? And is the bulk of your revenue a subscription model or, you know, sort of how does it work?
Yeah. We don't license our content out to anyone else. Our original content is only on Passion Flicks, but we do make it available for sale or rent on Amazon a few months after we release it on Passion Flicks. So if we'll release it basically like a second window.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So, but otherwise, if you want to watch the release of the movie in the first 4 months, you have to watch it on our platform.
And are you available internationally? Is your plan to go international?
So our technology allows us to be international. So we are in 150 countries we're in 150 countries, but only for our original content. So people can watch our original content anywhere in the world, but our licensed content is only for the United States, because we also license content from the studios that play alongside our original content. And so that licensed content is only for the US.
I see. Okay. And are you eventually down the road, do you have plans about having content that's developed, you know, sort of culturally, locally in these other places? Is that sort of, you know, Passion Flex 2.0?
That we would license content for other countries?
License content, and then eventually I would say, or I'm curious about original created content. I mean, that's one of the things we're seeing as Netflix expands, for instance.
Yes. So there are romance novels that are written by authors all around the world. And our focus, obviously, is in the romance genre. So we would happily find the best-selling romance novel in India and make it as an Indian movie for India down the road.
Right.
So absolutely, you know, our plan is to make movies that work with every country and culture.
Right. Now, the genre, picking this particular niche market, this romance market, is pretty unique. What led you to choose that? And why did you feel it was white space that was being underserved?
Well, a number of reasons. One, it's the number one selling genre in the world. That sort of goes hand in hand. It goes neck and neck with thrillers, thriller suspense. But so many thriller suspense are also romance. Mm. So it being the number one selling genre in the world, that's a good one. that's the main reason. The other one is that my partners and I have made so many movies in the past, and some of them are horror, some of them are, you know, Women in Jeopardy, some of them are, you know, cupcake movies, whatever you want to call them. But they didn't really speak to us, and we really wanted to make content that felt was just a little bit sexier, a little bit more empowering, a little bit more real. And this genre allowed us as filmmakers to be able to do that.
Right.
So it's personally satisfying besides, you know, it's a major market, but it's also personally satisfying and we have a lot of passion for it.
Now, obviously, you're a female director. Do you tend to work with female directors? I mean, that's something, you know, right now it's sort of in the cultural zeitgeist, you know, of women and women's roles. And is that part of what you're trying to do, or how does that play into it, women behind the camera?
Well, so of the four movies that we've made, I directed three of them.
So there's that.
The fourth one was, we did hire a female director for that role, for that movie as well. You know, there's always that point of we want to hire the best person for the job. But when you're dealing with female gaze and female-driven content and stories that have a very specific story to tell and an emotion to bring across, we do tend to look towards females before we look at males, just for, you know, men and women speak differently. And so, you know, it's more along those lines. Not to say that a man wouldn't be able to tell a story that has a female gaze to it, but, you know, but we do look towards females first. But in all areas, so we work with all of our producers are female. We work a lot with women. It's just easier.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense certainly, and in terms of familiarity with the genre and an appreciation for the genre. I'm curious, have you been at all involved with the Gina Davis Foundation, because she's so monitoring all this stuff?
No, not yet, but I look forward to being introduced.
They'd be really interested. They track and monitor revenue around women in movies, how much speaking time they get in movies, who's behind the camera, to help debunk some of the myths about, you know, men not seeing films with women leads, you know, things like that. Turns out they do. What do you know?
Yeah. What do you know?
So are you at all concerned that as the cable network, you know, are suffering and they're looking for over the top, that you are going to find competition coming, you know, chomping at your heels from people like Lifetime, for instance? And do they currently create competition for you?
They don't necessarily create competition for us, because our genres are slightly different. So firstly, ours is all based on best-selling IP. And so we take books and we adapt those books for film or television or, you know, series, and we work extremely closely with the authors. We want to make sure that we're bringing their vision to life. We have them involved in every aspect, from the script to casting, even coming up with, you know, when you send it out to Breakdown Services, we have them look at how we describe each character before we even send it out to the agencies. So we work very closely with the authors so that we can be true to their vision and bring on their fans, because we are making it for their fans.
Right.
And that's something that most networks and studios are not comfortable doing.
Right.
So that's the one thing, firstly. Secondly, our stuff is not original content. And Lifetime and Hallmark and Ion, they work on mostly original content. They do books every now and then, but again, they don't work as closely with the authors as we do. And when you gear it towards their audience is not as open to the sexy side of things.
I see.
It's generally quite tamed down.
Right.
And
right.
not and doesn't always follow the book. They will adjust a lot of the storylines and they'll adjust some characters in order to fit within their mandate. We won't do that.
I see. That's really interesting. The real allegiance to the author and the IP, and that really is quite distinct. It certainly isn't the way most people go at it. Are you also, I mean, from start to finish, what's your pipeline like? So you're identifying these bestsellers. How much do you have to have them in the pipeline in order to get to the point you've identified a bestseller? How long before you then can be in production, given that you are working as closely with these authors?
Very good question. I wish that we could work with much faster, but we can't. Not yet. We will be able to soon. But generally speaking, it takes about 5 months from beginning to end for each book to be turned into a movie for us. We can work very fast because we don't have too many people to go through or too many things to go through. So that being said, you know, we just locked picture on the Matchmaker's Playbook just before last week, Friday. Mm. I will finish the sound mix for Matchmaker's Playbook on March 1st. And I will start directing the next movie on March 6th.
Oh my God.
So I will prep all of this month in order to be ready for the next movie that will shoot in March that will come out at the end of May. So it's very tight and it's streamlined to the extent that we have to get a certain number of movies out and we have to do them very quickly. Mm. So our each day is micro scheduled.
Well, it's interesting how it reminds me a little bit of the way RHI Entertainment sort of would put out films. I mean, obviously they were making it for television, not for a standalone service, although I think now Sonar is standalone, or at least maybe through YouTube. At what point are you getting talent in, or do you have talent that sort of your celebrity people, a stable of people you tend to work with, your go-to people, or are they cast with unknowns? I mean, how about your talent?
Actors or directors?
Actors. I mean, I think the directors, I'm guessing you probably do have a stable of people you like. I'm guessing.
But we actually don't. So directors, come our way, please.
Okay, you hear that, ladies?
Yeah, please. You know, and just touching on the directors, the difficulty when finding a director or even some actors for these particular movies is almost all directors want to put their own stamp on it, change the script somewhat, make it more their vision. And while we are open to them stylistically coming in to create something, because obviously they were hired for a certain reason, their talent and their style and their ability to work with actors, we can't allow them to change the story. And so most of the times we find that when we bring on directors, they want to adjust the script, they want to change the story, they want to adjust the characters. The odd thing is the most of the directors that we brought on have tried to change the characters so that the females are weaker at the beginning and stronger at the end. And our characters are never weak. Our females are never weak. There's nothing wrong with them. Huh. So we find that they tend to make the character a little weaker, the female character. And so we will immediately come in and go, nope.
Well, that's the way they want to develop them, I suppose, rather than having them learn in a different way, in a more complex, right, difficult way. And also, it sounds like the art form, it isn't a director's art form in this case. It is really the creation of the author's art form, which is sort of a different take, it sounds like.
Yeah, to a certain degree. I mean, obviously I've directed these movies and I found them to be incredibly creative. I had a wonderful time being able to read a book, envision it, and then recreate that, but doing it in a way that the author is happy with.
Right.
That, as a filmmaker and as a creator, it's been wonderful. It's actually like you have somebody on your team.
Well, it sounds really collaborative, and people would often say women tend to work in a more collaborative way, and that they aren't as their creativity isn't as threatened by other voices. And so that's really, it sounds like the entire process is empowering and supportive, as well as the content is empowering and supportive, which is excellent.
And on the talent, we go through the same, process as all films. So casting director, casting breakdowns, and out to agencies and auditions or offer only. Depends on what the film needs.
Right. One of the things that we also look at in the stuff that I do, it has to do with how much churn a platform might have. And a lot of people look at, the original content, and that's what's going to keep people there. But we also feel that user experience is really important, because it gives the user a sense of value that they're getting out of the platform. And I'm curious, who on your team looks at your product, your platform, your experience? And are you constantly growing and changing that? And what part does data play in what you're doing? Because obviously that's one of Netflix's huge advantages, is that it started as sort of greenfield. They could build out that data, and they were constantly learning and tweaking. So how does data work in your product? And who's managing your product? And are you doing that too? My goodness, the woman who doesn't sleep.
I do that too.
Oh, God, really? Are you joking? You do?
Yes. I'm not the engineer. We have an outsourced engineering team, but I manage the general platform when it comes to the content that's going on and off and how it's promoted in that regard. And then also when it comes to the data, a lot of that I manage. All three of us pay attention to it, and then we analyze it. And what we have found is that our original content is needed, is wanted, is viewed by the thousands more than licensed content.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's wonderful. And
it speaks to the rightness of your vision, truly, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes. And so people, we can't make this original content fast enough.
Right.
So that's the great thing for us, for our audience.
Well, I have a question for you then. Mm-hmm. One of the things that startups often have trouble with is scaling. And not for nothing, but it does sound like you're wearing an awful lot of hats.
Yes.
So how can you scale?
Yesterday.
How can you scale? Given that obviously your vision, your passion, and your ability to really know what you want to happen is critical, and it's obviously working, but there are only so many hours in the day. And how are you going to scale? How are you going to delegate, and which parts will you be delegating?
So the main thing to delegate, and the best way for us to scale, is for us to find other filmmakers that can make these films. Mm-hmm. So I can't, as much as I love directing, and it actually comes down to this whole, I love directing so much. I love these stories so much that I just keep wanting to do the next one. And so each time I'm like, okay, we're going to find the director to do this next one. And I'm like, no, I really like it. The voice is me. So it's really my own doing. So if I don't get to sleep, I haven't slept since I had my twins. So it hardly affects me not to sleep now. But we also have a really good team. I mean, my partner Joni writes all the screenplays, and she's brilliant at adapting these books and so true to the author's work, and works very closely with the author. But yes, at some point we'll have to probably bring in another writer to write these right. screenplays. But so far she's managed to, I think she's written 10 screenplays of the 24 that we've adapted. We've optioned 24 books, and so 10 of the screenplays are done. We just shot the fourth one. We're about to shoot the fifth, and she's going to finish the next screenplay probably by tomorrow. So it's exciting in that regard. And then our other partner Gina, she is head of production, so she oversees the various producers.
She must be a wonder, because in order for you to make that March 1st to March 6th from now, she's got to have everything really like clockwork to support you.
there's a lot of ducks in a row. But also, because we make so many and we have such good relationships with the people that we work with, the very fortunate thing is that a lot of our crew, because we make them so close together, a lot of our crew are always on the next movie. So it's so while it's not, we don't have a big employee base within the company, for each movie we work almost with the same people.
Right.
So my DP is the same on every film. Our camera team's the same on every film. Production design, you know what I mean? So we work with the same team. So we have this knowledge, I guess, this firsthand
You have a shorthand of communication.
Shorthand, thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yes, we do need to scale. So we need to bring on other filmmakers. That's the best way for us to scale, so that I can concentrate a little bit more on the growing of the company, the marketing, the technology side of things, although I'm able to do that right now, and not direct everything every second month. Because we have to do 6 features, and we're doing 6 features and a series this year. It's a lot.
It is a lot.
I don't have time for that.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. We've actually run through the time we have available for the conversation. And thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. It's really fantastic. And I wish I could talk to you for hours, because I'm amazed, and I would like to know how you survive with no sleep and twins. I'm amazed.
Passion.
There you go. There it is. So yeah. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who have helped bring the program to life. First, my friend Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media, and a big thank you to our guest, Tosca Musk. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.